This is Amy Poehler. My new movie, Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, is coming to theaters June 14th. And it's making me feel joy and sadness and anger. Definitely some disgust.
Gross.
And I think a little fear.
Really?
But I'm also feeling these new emotions like anxiety, embarrassment, envy, and ennui.
It's what you call the boredom.
Okay, that one was weird. It's going to be the feel-everything movie of the summer. Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, only in theaters June 14th. Get tickets now.
Hey, welcome to American Horror Story Podcast by Bald Move for Season 6, My Roanoke Nightmare. I'm your host, Aaron.
And I'm Cecily.
Tonight's episode is for episode 602,
Chapter 2.
Oh, Chapter 2. Episode 2, Season 6, Episode 2, Chapter 2. It's fun. I like this because usually I'd get into these intros and wreck it because I realize halfway through I've forgotten the title and I have to look it up. And now it's just like, what is the episode number? Add a chapter in front of, you're done.
Yeah, you're doing great.
So episode chapter 602, I'll find a new way to fuck it up. What'd you think of this episode?
I liked it. I don't care what anybody says. I'm enjoying it.
Okay.
Seems like everyone hates it. I don't care.
I didn't hate it.
I just
thought that we're swerving into some of the worst of the Murphy tendencies of the last few years second episode.
Like, he's never given us a reason to think he's going to do differently, so why does everyone expect differently?
I think
that's a problem, is everyone setting their expectations way too high.
I guess if I was an improvisational jazz musician and there's a certain part in, you know, my jam that was making everybody like give a look in the club like someone just farted, that after a while I'd be like, you know what, maybe it's not that I'm super clever and super like a jazz pioneer, maybe this part just sucks, Murphy's just that fart smell. You like that fart smell?
That's a strange analogy.
Yeah. And I mix all kinds of different visual, audio, olfactory stimulus in my analogy.
Yeah, clearly. But sure.
So, to me, the big problem of the episode continues to be the fact that Lee is an unbelievable character, and the other characters act in ways that I find inexplicable. Like, you know, if you think about this, we've spent more time with these characters than we do in the average horror movie, right? You know, average horror movie is 90 to 120 minutes. We spent that much time with these people. You're more willing to overlook, like, you know, teenagers doing stupid stuff at the cabin with, Freddy or Jason. It'd be Jason with the teenagers at the cabin, chasing after them. Where you're spending a whole season with people. It's like, man, I kind of want to like and admire and have these people be a little bit more resourceful.
I agree with that. I think Shelby's the most unbelievable character. Where she got her steely resolve to suddenly want to stay after an actual threat appears.
It directly contradicts her arc from the previous episode, where she was getting more and more frightful.
Right, she got scared by the strings. Was it the strings that set her off and made her drive off in her car immediately?
Yeah, I think so.
Being strung throughout the house,
right.
Was that it?
Right.
And suddenly she sees an actual human sacrifice and wants to stay?
Right.
Like, that's the hoax they could pull off, but the thing before wasn't.
It was just a bunch of Hobby Lobby shit.
Right.
You know, abject terror. Seeing a man simulated scalping and burning at the stake. All right.
That's actually a great idea. We should decorate our house with just Blair Witch stick figures from hanging from the ceiling.
What would the neighbors say if on our front lawn we erected this like 8-foot stick figure with a real pig's head that slowly rotted over the course of all of October?
Oh my God, just covered in flies.
And then in the night of Halloween, we set it on fire.
Well,
we play at loud volumes, pig squealing. You find a recording at a butcher, these pigs' final moments. Just scream, oh man.
Yeah, we'll totally get away with that.
Everyone's favorite neighbors ever.
Let's get into the recap.
So, they continue. Okay, the other thing is structurally, Murphy has to pivot away from the structure sooner rather than later, because this conceit of showing us shocking moments that we're about to see, like, this is classic, you know, ghost hunter stuff, but it's really not working on a scripted drama, because it's like a preview for the episode the last 60 minutes before we see it. And for what little tension we have with, you know, all the main characters not dying is kind of drained. To be drained from that. I don't like it.
Well, here's the thing I wrote down. It's crazy that
they continue to go all in on this faux show.
Here's the thing that I wrote down.
Faux show.
Here's the thing that I wrote down on the first run through in my notes. And that is Flora can die because we don't see any present recaps of her. And then, you know, she disappears at the end of the episode.
Well, and she's a fucking Eeyore, also, man. Always about, oh, everyone's going to die. We're all going to die. Tried to barter our lives for the doll. No deal. You screwed it up, Mom. She can die.
And also, any of these talking heads could lose their arms or their legs. So
that's
there's that.
True.
They can withstand physical harm.
That's true.
So that's...
They're going to pull out and... what do you think about the theory that was advanced in our feedback again this week of the fact that these guys are actually ghosts being interviewed on whoever the psychic played by Sarah Paulson last season was?
I think that sounds absolutely ridiculous.
So
I think it's definitely going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, it's something Murphy would do is make us think that this is actually just a loving recreation of these cheesy reality-based ghost shows, and then pivot into this is a reality-based ghost show. They're interviewing ghosts and like you would living people.
Well, here's the thing: is that the ghost whisperer character can see the ghosts and hear them. But we as the audience or other characters in that universe can't see them. So
right.
Why would they record each individual interview? It would just be like a blank tape.
Yeah, right.
That only Sarah Paulson can hear.
I don't know. Maybe they got special spooko cameras or something. Ghost of cameras.
Okay.
Ghost of vision. I wish that stuff was real, because how rad would... I would watch the hell out of a series where they got the ghosts from the Titanic. And like, we're going to interview these ghosts, their eyewitness testimonies.
Well, there wouldn't be any mysteries left.
Ghost of Vesuvius.
To have Jimmy Hoffa come up and say, oh, my body's right over there.
Right.
He's there the whole time, you guys. How silly.
Turns out it was buried in the Meadowlands Stadium.
That's no fun.
Yeah. Okay, so we have the previews for the coming episode, and then we rejoin our scene already in progress of Sarah Paulson's character, Shelby, the reenactor Shelby, experiencing a reenactment of just a truly terrifying scene of men stumbling out of the woods from freshly being scalped, men being transformed into pigs by a vengeful Kathy Bates with a questionable accent, nailing pig parts onto them and then being roasted at a stake, and she's panic stricken by this, and she flees and runs out into the middle of the road where she's almost run down by Lee.
I have a question about the timeline of these woods events.
Shoot.
She's encircled by this group,
right?
She runs away from the group,
right?
She finds them again having built a spitfire,
mm-hmm,
to roast this guy.
Yeah. I mean, obviously...
So they encircled her and they know she's there.
Yeah.
And they don't bother to give chase, but then when she's overseeing their ritual, they do give chase.
I mean, so if you think this is all just ghostly visions, none of that's a problem, really.
Okay.
But if you think of it as, like, people playing a hoax on her, that's a huge problem, right?
Yeah.
Like, what the hell is actually going on? How is she getting away? Where is the physical space happening?
Where did that accent come from?
When yeah. Yeah. And also, like, you know, this, even if this was a hoax and people are milling around in the woods and they remove all the physical evidence, there's still going to be a lot of trampled woods.
Right.
Like a big, you know, if you get 50, 60 people out in the middle of the woods and have them mill around for 15 minutes, that's an unmistakable,
you know what,
of the land for several days.
If nothing else, the actual ground breathing would be would be what made me believe that it was real.
Yeah. How can a bunch of
rednecks pull off a stunt that amazing?
Sure. Or I took, some weird drugs.
Even though I don't take drugs.
Even though I don't take drugs.
Someone spiked my rosé.
You know who else doesn't take drugs? Shelby. And the hospital helpfully lets us know that she is drug-free. Yoga is her anti-drug.
Wonderful.
Downward facing dog is her anti-drug.
Sorry, I have one question real quick.
Yes.
The talking heads have changed clothes. Is there a significance to them wearing a different outfit than they were last week in their interviews?
Clearly last week they're all ghosts, now they're heat people.
Okay.
I don't know. I just I you know, here's the thing.
Like in
I
interview
haven't...
time, what is that? 10 minutes of interview time, and you're like, oh, you're done for the day. Go home.
Yeah,
we'll
wrap
see you
up.
Tomorrow.
Well, I haven't seen enough of these real television shows. Like I've seen long form documentaries, like you know, yeah. Making a Murder, and people they're changing clothes all the time because that's something that's happened over the course of years.
Yeah.
But here you're right. Like for these ghost shows, I think it'd be like, okay, you're here from 1 to 4. We got everything from you. Get out of here. Like,
yeah,
I mean, maybe
exactly.
Maybe if there's a follow-up or a or another development.
Then costuming puts you in the same t-shirt or something.
Yeah, just so you don't. Yeah, just so you don't ask questions. Yeah, I don't know what the rules for continuity on these documentaries are. I remember I was listening to a recent Dan Harmon podcast, and you're talking about the Harmontown documentary and how they were wanting to do reshoots of some scenes, and he's like, oh, I realized that I was wearing...
But it was like a year later.
Yeah, and it's like, oh, what was I wearing, and do I even have those clothes anymore? And
then he put on the shirt and realized that he had gained, like, 50 pounds
right.
in a year.
Yeah.
It didn't work anymore.
You know, it's like, nothing is real, folks. Everything is magic. But yeah, she almost gets ran over by a lead. They take her to the hospital. Matt says, hey, you know what? Finally, we'll get someplace else to stay. This is crazy. She was covered in blood, wasn't she? Or no? Why was she taken to the hospital?
I think she was covered in blood because, like, she had run through all the...
Yeah. Okay. Because I remember, I was like, if she wasn't, why the hell did they take her to the hospital?
She was scraped up and she passed out on the road. That's why she went to the hospital, I think.
Right. And she says, no, we have to stand our ground. This is an elaborate hoax for those rednecks to run us off our land. And we can't let them do this. Every cent that we own is tied up in this house. And I'm like, okay.
Is it?
Plus, you know, like, here's the thing.
Your entire savings was $40,000.
Yeah. For people that were living...
How much money did you put in renovations?
And for people that were living out in L.A., I feel like 40 grand is... I mean, I wouldn't be excited to lose $20,000, but
right.
It wouldn't break me. And I'm of fairly modest means, so...
Just, you know, in our recent experience, I don't think that's how house buying works. I mean, unless you opted to... take actual real money and just put it into the house instead of getting a mortgage or something.
And that's
like
what they did. They said it's their entire savings.
So what money are they using to renovate the house?
Probably.
And with renovations, I find it impossible to believe you can't get $75,000 out of that house.
Well, I mean, if they disclose the full history of it, the fact that it's got so
apparently
many
murderers.
Apparently
you don't have to.
And, yeah, just change the street name again. That, you know, I guess that's a real thing, too, that's something that people have been doing. It's not happened a lot, but, like, you know, they can, because house numbers get reordered in, like, 9/11 things.
Oh, yeah.
911 phone, you know, phone call redistricting and, like, road street names get changed. Like, some of that shit gets buried and realtors have used it to their advantage, but...
Yeah.
It's not something that, like, it's not a go-to play because it's, like, not super cheap or easy to get a house, you know... street address changed.
I don't think that someone dying in a house would deter me from buying it.
Well, no,
then
because
again,
we don't fucking believe in ghosts
yeah.
and supernatural. So yeah, murder all the people in my house as long as you got the blood out and the you know the shit pants off the walls and all that stuff. And
I definitely
I'm
would use it as a bargaining chip, though.
But I, you know, like I'm thinking of the person I was. Like I used to think that there's no way I could possibly live next to a graveyard because even if I don't, like I didn't. Believe in ghosts even back when I was a Christian, but like the possibility
zombies.
Of the magic world, like you had the fact that all these dead it just create and now it's like I'm like, man, that was really silly.
Mm-hmm.
That was really silly. 20 year old me.
I do, however, believe that you should never build on top of a Native American burial.
Well, that's
ground.
Just showing respect for other cultures and religions. I mean,
but they definitely
I,
do
asshole?
Come back to life.
Yeah.
Fact.
Yeah, I mean, Native Americans have magic. We know this. It's a true thing. So it's right to respect that and fear it. So Lee comes back with a talking head segment where she talks about how shitty she is as of a mother and how can a mother do the things I did in those times. Again, as far as I know, she didn't fuck her husband for a month and missed picking up her girl 2 or 3 times at the school. I'm not seeing the monster here. I wish they did a better job of showing me exactly how bad she got, or I don't know.
No, I think it's more the fact that just when you're an addict, you can fall off the wagon at any time, which clearly she did with little provocation at the absolute worst time to do it.
What I'm saying
and
is
you
like,
just, I think that Mason's point is that you just need some good, clean time before. And how long's it been since she was kicked out?
Yeah, sure.
As opposed to how long she was under the influence.
But that's the thing. I don't know. Like, they make it seem like maybe, like, again, the time frames I'm given it are a few months of her slipping into alcoholism after getting shot. And, you know, this seems extreme. Like, if we were married for 10, 15 years and had a child, and you had a traumatic work experience that injured you and left you addicted to prescription narcotics, I don't think in like 2 or 3 months I would escalate to we're done. I'd be like, you need to get help. You need to get into a treatment program, all that kind of stuff. Like, this stuff right. is just all bizarre.
Yeah, it is.
Especially since she was apparently a paragon of virtue and strength up until that point.
Right.
So, like, and that
even,
is like...
Even in the accident, she didn't do anything wrong. She just got caught with a bottle of pills in her car.
I mean, maybe Isaac, or is that her husband's name?
Mason.
Maybe Mason's just a fucking uncompromising narcissistic prick, and we haven't come to appreciate that yet. But, like, that's just totally bizarre to me. Anyway, so after she talks about how she's a shitty mother, guess what? Her daughter pulls up, uh-huh. and she's giving the house the full 8-year-old stink eye. Like, there's no Wi-Fi here.
Yeah.
There's no Nickelodeon or Disney Channel here. And she says, I'm going to keep her inside and keep a close eye on. And I'm just the whole time, I'm like... This is horseshit. Like, Murphy is trying to write a universe in which we're going to accept the fact that a mother would bring her child into this circumstances where she's babysitting at best a crazy lady. In the middle of nowhere where there's nothing fun for the kids to do. In the middle of a school year, like, there's no, like, what?
Yeah, just go stay in a hotel near Mason's house so that you can get her for maybe even more time.
Yeah.
And then everyone can take a break from Ghost House.
And then she's like, they show her playing jacks, and she's smiling, Jesus. And she's like, this is the type of girl can make it. I'm like, no kid, this is not
Nobody
realistic child
jacks.
Behavior. In the days of iPads and internet and video games, you sit down and try to get a child to play jacks, and they will be, what the fuck is this bullshit?
Yeah.
What the fuck is this bullshit? Like, again, I'm not saying kids can't appreciate, like, going outside and doing different stuff and they don't have to be playing video games all the time, but Jax, that's straight-up bullshit. That's stuff that people did before they invented Game Boys.
Actually, you know what? Now that I'm thinking about it, I remember about 5 or 6 years ago, I lived in an apartment complex where I saw the local kids playing a type of Jax with silly bands. You remember the bracelets that were the shape of animals, they would do that, and that's how they would trade their silly bands.
Really? They weren't, like, snapping? Like,
they would
just
drop
really...
a ball, and while it was up in the air, they grabbed as many as they could, and that was the game.
Huh. All right.
But Jax, no. Adeline.
Riveting. So, and then, on the very first fucking day, this girl starts talking to the ghost lady and swapping bonnets and shit.
A little girl. Ghosty girl.
And... You know, and also she's like, when her mom goes to question her, she's like, oh yeah, I'm talking to my invisible friend who is tired of all the blood and says she's going to kill us all. And this flat affect voice that I think Murphy thinks is creepy, but I think is just, like, if you want a kid to be matter-of-facting about being covered in blood and all that stuff, they need to be like 3 years old.
Yeah.
Like, this girl who's playing 8 and I think she's 12 is just, it looks like she's got something wrong with her.
Well,
like, it's not reading as innocent and doesn't know that this is, like, abnormal and the ghost is corrupting. It's like, this person is just really dumb and, you know, emotionally stunted and not appropriately afraid of things that should be scary.
Right. Not so much this scene, but especially in the next one.
Yeah. Yeah. Then we see a window open and a vase gets broken full of flowers, and Lee goes and investigates and finds a bonnet.
Oh.
A old to time bonnet.
Bonnet.
It's one half of a giant bra.
Oh my God.
Yeah, you don't know the old time settler bra. Kathy Bates. That could be a Bates bra.
One half of it, sure.
One half of it, exactly. Someone cut it in half, mm-hmm. and she snapped it through the window. She sniped with her old-timey elastic bra, hit the vase. It shattered. The broken glass sheared the bra in twain. That's QED what happened.
Amazing.
What
a great story.
So they... have a bunch of tension because Shelby quite reasonably points out, what is your sister thinking? She's got all these problems. We've got all these problems. And she's introducing a young girl into the mix. What the fuck?
Mm-hmm.
This marriage is primed to explode. Then they hear a bunch of late night squealing and oinking. Squealing and oinking. And she decides that she needs to go out and investigate this nighttime affair. And they find a wicker pig, which is a wicker man with a pig head on it, with all kinds of meat offerings hung, strung all about. And they cut back.
Those are the organs of the guy, right?
I think so.
Yeah.
They cut back to modern day or non-reenactor actual Matt. And he goes, this is beyond having a cross burn on your lawn. Like, understatement of the century.
Seriously.
Yeah.
Like, there might still be human head inside that pig head that's still bleeding. Actively.
Sure. Sure. This is like the this is like the combined Voltron of cross burnings. Like, you take all the different hate crimes and they join forces and you get a wicker pig.
Super hate crime.
Yeah. It's a super mega fortress defense hate crime.
At least the evidence of this was still there when the police came.
Yeah.
I think that was the only thing that they actually saw. Well, except for the strung up Blair Witch dolls in the house.
But
that
this is like this real. Like, but then again, I thought it was funny the cops last says, well, this is just simple vent. No, it's actually trespassing and intimidation and like all kinds of different things, but
and definitely what would appear to be a hate crime.
Well, this is just your standard Louisiana pig sticker. You see, this is how we warm
this
houses.
This is just a senior prank the kids.
What, you
do
don't
every
like
year.
Bacon? You don't like pork chops? This is arranging cuts of meat for your enjoyment. Is all this is. Anyway, so the cops show up and this stuff is actually, there's a distinction between the shit that's happened on the ghosty ghost level and the shit that the Pokes are up to, right? And what I don't understand are the Pokes the heroes of this story?
Why? Because they showed up in the first episode and have never been seen again?
Well,
I don't think they're to blame for any of this. I don't think they're involved at all.
How the hell are the ghosts doing this stuff then? Like physically manifesting pig fortresses.
I don't know. I guess they're just physically manifesting. I don't know the exact science of it because it's not real, but
okay. Yeah, I mean, fair point, but I'm saying like I wonder if there's a distinction because I think the reason I say it are the Pokes the heroes because they tried to buy back this house. Maybe they're going to burn it down and they said you don't want this house. And then we've never seen him again and like it's just like, it seems like from this episode this house is a nexus of bad shit happening, so maybe it's going to turn out that they're the heroes of the story. They're like the backwoods Ghostbusters and they're just.
And you know what, she even mentions that she should offer to sell it to them now in the state it's in, or Shelby does. Why don't they? Like
yeah.
They keep mentioning or they keep suggesting that they're trapped in this situation that they can't get out of. I don't see how that's the case at all.
Yeah, like, hey, would you give, hey, rednecks, you beat us. Would you give us 20 grand for it? 10, anything that you get is going to be better than the nothing that you're fearing, right?
Right.
Okay, so the cops have agreed to give them 24/7 protection with the sheriff's deputy out in the driveway, which I'm like, okay, well, cool. Maybe the cops aren't going to be worthless after all. They're gonna do something to protect these people. And Matt says, we finally get the chance to relax and sleep, except an unplugged old-ass phone, like, you know, the old Ma Bell battleship models.
Yeah.
Starts ringing in the middle of the night, and he picks up, and an old woman is saying, please, they're hurting me, why are you letting them? And then he turns around, and there's this horrifying tableau behind him. The kids are coming the phone calls are coming from inside the house, and we see these nurses tormenting this old woman named Margaret, and they shoot her in the head for no reason. And
well, she talked back to them.
Well, yeah, that's true.
You can't do that.
You can't let the old people get uppity.
No.
Like, my God, you know.
Like, you've had your time. You lived a full life. Now.
Sure. Look at American politics. This is what happens when you let the old folks just run amok.
Yeah.
That's pretty much the cop. So he runs out and he's hysterical. He's like, oh my God, there's someone in a house and they just killed somebody. And the cop comes in there and looks and sees, I guess the cop thinks that I think isn't he opine that, oh, you guys must have been dreaming. And I guess that's reasonable because there's absolutely no evidence of any disturbance.
Sure. But I think it's also very reasonable for this couple to have experienced a couple real traumatic events that they were able to prove, and to also reasonably have
yes.
a type of post-traumatic
stress. You wake up from a nightmare and you think it's real. Absolutely. But I also think what Lee comments about, I'm afraid that the cops are starting to think that these people are kooks and they're crying wolf and they're not going to believe them when they're really need. Like, I feel like that's also, like, this is like how many times they've been out here for stuff. Like, I would, if I was the good old boy police, I wonder when I would start thinking that the people from LA are actually fucking with the hill folk.
I mean, like, here's the thing is that you did get yourself a police officer to come and stay with you 24/7. It's Lee.
Yeah.
What has she done?
Well,
besides not carry around her gun and sleep through most of the horrifying things happening.
Right, right.
And commit more crimes.
Yeah, but she's on the whatever she's on. What is it? The hillbilly heroin? Oxycodone? That's it. That's what it is.
Oxycodone?
Is it oxycodone?
Painkillers?
Sure.
Heroin?
There you go. All of the above.
Moonshine?
And then Matt says in another talking head sequence, it's just amazing how long someone can rationalize the irrational. Well, it turns out it's about 10 to 13 episodes on the average season. That's how long you can rationalize here. The irrational. Turns out we've got the answer. So then we got the next day, and Lee is trying to round up her child, and she is playing this special hiding game. Do you have something else that you'd like to comment?
I did. I wanted to mention that the nurses seemed very reminiscent from the season one plot. One of the murders that happened involved two nurses breaking into a house and killing people.
Okay.
I don't know if anyone else got that same. Please let me know.
So they're playing a special hiding game where she just run off and hide.
Otherwise known as everything that, or the same thing that all kids do all the time,
yeah,
always.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's not an organized. She's more of an amateur hider. This isn't any kind of professional basis, or it's really a form of guerrilla warfare is what she's trying to do. And I'm like, oh my god, is Murphy going to go the direct Conjuring ripoff and like they're going to start clapping and like I started getting excited, but nothing that cool is going to happen.
No, it was the Sixth Sense ripoff. Have you seen that movie?
Oh yeah.
Where he's in the, is it the butler? What do you call it? The butler elevator?
The dumbwaiter.
Dumbwaiter, yeah.
Yeah. But they finally find her, and she's having a conversation, and she's bewildered that her friend disappeared. And she says, I tried to trade her my doll so they wouldn't kill us all. Next scene, we see Mason dragging the child out, putting him in the back seat, and like, woman, get the fuck away. And I'm like, you know, this is a fine way to handle things. Like, this girl, like, yeah, I get it, Mason. You think she's traumatized, but, like, she's further being traumatized by being ripped away from her mother. Like,
and you're going to save her for last.
I think the proper response is to grab her and be all smiles and be like, tell your mom goodbye. We'll see her real soon. And just never come back. Talk to the judge. Like, don't.
Rip them away from each other, screaming and crying.
Yeah, but, you know, I get it that parents sometimes get all fucked up in the head about this shit, and they can't think logically and rationally. So I'll give them a bit of a pass, but this whole storyline is just, there is zero thought to making this believable or realistic or sympathetic at all. It's just, I need a girl to be creeped out, I need a girl to be in danger, I need a mother to feel guilty, so I'm gonna throw this thing. Like literally the first draft of what I can come up with, start filming it.
And back to your earlier point, and I understand that this is all subjective, but part of me thinks that Mason was already falling out of love with Lee before she got addicted to drugs. Because you go from zero to not giving a shit about a person.
It does feel like a pretense, doesn't it?
It does.
So,
like, you're concerned about your daughter, but, you know, there's also what seems to be a very real threat. And you're going to tear them away and say, hey, you know, you can still get your time with Flora, but she's not coming back here.
Right. You know, I'm going to fully embrace that idea, and I'm going to take it one further. I bet we're going to get an episode where you find out that he's actually had a lover this whole time, and you're going to have a vengeance, like a very violent version of Stella Got Her Groove Back kind of thing.
I mean, it's even more reason for Flora to act out. It's all happening so fast.
Yeah. So then we find out Lee says, this is the day I fell off the wagon. I'm like, oh, great. I'm taking an annoying character, and now we're going to just delve into the depths of substance abuse with her. Great. Shelby and Matt come flying in when she breaks something, and they find her stumbling drunk in the kitchen, and Shelby's like, this is bullshit, and then she's like, ah, Lee, why'd you throw all these knives in the ceiling? Like, for
fucking...
Are we
still doing this?
Yeah, like, so in this situation, in this house, where knives have already mystically moved around, you see a bunch of, both of you, see a bunch of knives stuck in the ceiling, and your first thought is... Lee's drunkenly acting out.
Mm-hmm.
Come on.
Right.
Don't insult my intent. Like, why? Why? Just have him go right through. Oh my God, the knives.
Yeah.
Like, God damn. The fact that she's a stumbling drunk is already a problem. We don't need to add amateur knife thrower to the situation.
Right. She broke a plate trying to make herself a PB&J or something. That doesn't mean she threw knives in the ceiling.
It's just such a bizarre choice in the writing.
And especially for her to say that she... That she didn't do it. I just want to quickly move past the I'm not believing you, you're not believing me thing when we're all in the same situation and we've all seen these things together.
Indeed, indeed. So there's a meditation from Matt in the talking head sequence remarking that Lee has always been the strong one in the family and it's really worrying him to see her fall apart like this, and he tells her as much in the reenactment. He says, you know, get your shit together, woman. And she's like, I can't, I'm too weak. I can't let the audience identify with me at all. And then Shelby calls him downstairs, and while...
I have to disagree with you. I think Angela Bassett's the strongest performance.
I think... No, there's nothing wrong with her performance. It's just like, she's being asked to portray... You know, she's been asked to play a theremin, and there's really not very many ways you can do that and look cool. Like, I think she's doing the best job she can, and I still love her in, like, every sense of the word, but her character this year is just hot garbage.
All right.
My opinion. Reasonable people can disagree. So while he's creeping downstairs, two nurses, the same ones that tormented the old lady in Matt's vision, approach Lee's bed. Shelby asks Matt, can you see her? And they look through the grimy windows, and sure enough, there is a figure standing out in their backside front yard.
Front yard. Catty corner front yard.
Okay. That's what they said on the real estate listing anyway. Enjoy our catty corner storm cellar in the frontish yard. The frontish yard.
You won't even notice the entrance until a ghost shows it to you.
that's security. Through obscurity, ghost obscurity.
Security through obscurity.
So he says, yeah, I do see her. They go out to investigate. Of course, she disappears, but she was standing on a cellar door, and we go full on season one Lost when we reveal a hatch with a ladder and a tunnel going down into the ground. Back in the house, we see there's wriggling bloody pigtails nailed up all over the hallway, and there is a full-on pig man standing in the hallway to torment her.
Squeal like a pig.
Yep, going back to the half-man, half-animal. Well, haven't pumped that well dry yet. So, meanwhile, Shelby and Matt are continuing to explore this apparently well-stocked but long-abandoned cellar. I mean, this cellar looks like it hasn't been open for like 50 years, but it has a modern television and camera setup. Not modern, I guess, like a decade old at this point.
Yeah, I wouldn't say it was there for 50 years.
Okay.
I guess you're right. Just,
dust doesn't take that long to accumulate.
Right. It's a poorly insulated door. Look at our house. Exactly.
And our house isn't even underground in a poorly insulated root cellar. Roots are dusty as fuck.
Right.
Like, if you look at any housekeeping magazine, they say, rule number one, don't have roots in your house.
Fact.
Try not to have roots growing from your ceiling. They are a dust factory and magnet.
Factory magnet.
That's a factory fact. So we find out, as you probably already guessed, that this is a tape that Russell Edgington has made. We don't know the guy's name. O'Hare character. Do we? Oh, yes. He's Professor Cunningham. We do now know his name.
I was just going to say his name is Russell Edgington.
Professor R. Edgington from Bon Toms University. He says, look, I know you're going to think I'm crazy, but I am an author. I'm an intellectual. I'm an academic. I am not crazy. And he says, And I kept on thinking, like, what would it be like to actually find, like, wouldn't it be so fascinating if you moved into a house and there's like a VHS tape and you watch it and it's actually something like this?
Yeah.
Like, what would you be thinking the whole time? He says that he was here in October of 1997, October 11th, to research,
So 20 years, he's 20 years old.
20 years old, and he's from Bradley University, home of the Fighting Vehicles. And he's researching a true crime novel about Miranda and Bridget, the twins from the 1988 that were involved in the mysterious deaths of several elderly patients. When they worked for an assisted living house, then they decided to bail once the heat got on them too much and opened up their own assisted living place. He also researched the previous, and they opened it up in the home, the Roanoke Nightmare Home that we're familiar with. Mm-hmm. And he's also done further research into the previous family that owned it had also ran off in mysterious circumstances. So he explains they had a peculiar fetish for the crime. They recruited elderly people who, number one, their families don't give a shit. These families are shitty. It's like, hey, can you put grandma or grandpa in cold storage until they're dead? Can you? Great, thanks, appreciate it. They also selected people's had a peculiar letter of their first name because they were trying to spell out with murdering their people their favorite word, which turns out to be murder. It's murder. I guess they didn't get to the R, and that's probably going to be significant later in the season. This is already like what this is dumb.
Is
their favorite word
their
is
favorite
murder.
Word is murder. That's hacky, right?
Yeah, it's super. And because I was actually like, oh, rim R-E-M, what? And no, it's just murder,
right?
Murd, come on, man.
Yeah.
And he starts telling a story about how like they tried to paint over this several times and they couldn't. The words kept bleeding through. And then you see people like wallpapering over it and this dissolves. The Matt frantically running to the kitchen, peeling off the wallpaper, and sure enough, murder.
Man, I wish wallpaper in any other house came off that easy. Okay. That's incredible.
Well, to be fair,
I gotta know that brand.
The Louisiana summer is essentially just a steam gun turned to high heat
the
whole
North
time.
Carolina.
Oh, you're right. Why do I keep saying Louisiana?
I don't know.
I don't know either.
Coven?
No, it's because I watched Magnificent Seven last night that also featured a Cajun that had no, you know, they kept calling it Cajun, but there was
Spoilers.
No accent or.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so it's like I got fake Cajun on the mind, I guess. But yeah, no, they find that the murder is actually under the wallpaper. Ah,
okay, I find this to be the easiest thing to fake. The VHS tape as well as the covered up word under the wallpaper.
Man, that's a lot. I mean, yes, technically it's easier to pull off, but there's
easier
a lot
to
of moving
pull
parts.
Off than a fake satanic ritual, than stringing up a bunch of dolls in your house, than putting a hospital bed and shooting someone in front of your eyes. This, I think, is the easiest thing to fake.
Oh, yeah, maybe they did that while they're hanging up the paper. Yeah. The dolls. They're like, you know what? Cletus? Yeah, you guys got plenty of people hanging up the dolls. I'm going to do some accent work here in the kitchen because a border would just really set this place off, don't you think, Roscoe? So, yeah.
What an amazing B&E idea, just to break into someone's house and just wallpaper it. You just come home and one wall is wallpapered.
Sure, sure.
Okay, and I've got a mind bender.
When you
for
say
B and
E, I thought you meant like I thought you were trying to say bed and breakfast idea, and I'm like,
no.
What Cletus and Roscoe's bed and breakfast with like you know, Blair Witch shit hanging up. Like I guess you could get like some goth kids to go in for that, but
nope.
B&E, yes, B&E. It would be an interesting B&E idea.
Okay, so this videotape that we're watching. Of the girls, of the nurses that murder.
Mm-hmm.
This is a story that happened after what we're actually going to get to, which is some sort of Roanoke thing that happened years and years and years ago that set it off.
Sure.
Are the Roanoke people the reason for the nurses disappearing?
Could be.
Are they the actual haunting?
Are they the real heroes?
So is this a story within a story within a story? Within a story?
When you're watching Russ... Okay, so we have a story, which is the ghost show.
Right.
A reenactment of Shelby and Matt watching a tape,
yes.
Which is another show Then they then cut to a reenactment of the nurses. Yes. So yeah, I think you hit. This is limbo. If the nurses die, there's no way they could get back to their brains.
No.
Yeah. That... Yeah. I know my Inception rules. So
was the murder still spinning when we left?
Professor Russ E. Edgington opines that the nurses were stopped by something even more evil than they are. I can't stop saying opine. I've noticed that's a little word whisker for me this week. So it's like a total Blair Witch situation where he's taking this. He's like going in for his last stand. He's got his camcorder and it's in fucking infrared mode. So you can just see like this tiny pinprick of light through it. And he's just breathing heavy and screaming, "Show yourself." And he gets attacked in the tape, and simultaneously in the real universe, a bloody cleaver is embedded into the front door.
Ooh.
Still all a hoax. We're very clear about that.
Those poke boys.
Those pokes, they get up there. They're just this.
They're just practical jokers.
Bunch of fucking pig pokers is what I think.
It's almost Halloween.
It is. It is. It's 20 days away. So they call the bank out and be like, "Y'all be trifling and you did not give us any kind of forewarnings or stuff about this. And like, you should have disclosed the fact that there were ghosts and pig heads about." And the bank's like, "Mer-her, fuck you. We got your money. If you want to sell, we can give the we can give the poke boys reasonable and attractive rates." So it's like, why do we even see this scene?
Just another lame excuse for why they can't leave the house. I'm still
my idea is
it.
That this guy's such a shit, and that they're going to bring him back later in the season just so he can get his gut splattered for something.
Yeah,
I bet he comes back just to be killed.
Yeah, they do decide to.
You know,
to
anytime
sell.
You have like a repulsive real estate agent, a repulsive lawyer, or any kind of professional that's an asshole in the Murphy thing, they're marked for death.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm on to you, Murphy. So. Then we see, after this bad news, Lee comes breezing in with Flora, and Matt's like, "Well, my sister's done committed a felony. This is parental kidnapping." And he says, "Are you drunk?" And she's like, "Oh, I might be a mother who's done unimaginable crazy things in my lowest depths, but I would never get in my car with a drop of alcohol in my system when I'm picking up my baby girl." And I'm like...
So you're telling me...
Who are you kidding? Who are you kidding?
Exactly.
Lady?
You're telling me in the month that we know of that you were addicted to painkillers.
Totally out of control.
Taking two a day. Only forgot to pick up your daughter three times, but you didn't do it all the other times.
Taking two an hour.
Two an hour, sorry.
Two a day is like, you know, that's what I just do to maintain. That's how I get out of bed every morning. Two an hour, that's extreme.
Right, right. But maybe she's right. Maybe she never drank and drive, just took pills and drove. And that was fine.
Yeah.
That's an acceptable
right.
Thing to do.
Anyway, Matt's like, "Well, this is crazy because you're going to get us all in a bunch of trouble. And also, you're never, ever going to see Flora after this stunt." Like, you know.
Yeah, where's the justification in your mind for that?
I'll
see her this one time in exchange for never seeing her again.
I do know that there are mothers and fathers that have this crazy magical thinking about how to deal with these kind of custody situations. Mm-hmm. But they haven't really painted Lee like she's that person.
Right.
Like, she's this really contradiction of this steely, resourceful, capable person who's also an out-of-control, impulsive lunatic.
Again... Let me just and posture like even that if she had taken Flora and stayed in a hotel near Mason's house, he would have allowed that. There's no reason why he wouldn't have.
Well, but the thing is she's her brother called her out here. So, like, I understand why she's out here.
Everyone go stay in a hotel. Get the fuck out of there.
Yeah, right.
Season over.
They can't let them run them off, man.
All right.
So anyway, Mason calls, and of course he's fucking livid and scared, and Shelby does a very good job of talking him down and talking sense. Like, I was proud of her for not, you know, escalating the situation. This seems like something that a smart person would do. So why is the yoga bunny, who's all carrot lattes and stuff, why is she the one making all this sense?
I don't know.
Like, I feel like
maybe
Matt should have this.
She's the one that's possessed.
You're always more sane and capable when you're dealing with someone else's problems. Haven't you noticed that?
What?
Yeah.
I don't deal with anyone else's problems.
No, I mean, like, you know, like, if I'm just saying, like, maybe
no,
this isn't
I get
anything.
It. I understand.
Yeah.
I'm making a bad joke. Because
you're too far. You're one step removed from the insanity yourself. So then we see a ghost encounter from Flora's perspective. We see a spirit beckoning her outside. And then shortly after, Lee discovers she's missing. And she runs out into a suddenly foggy, pigtail-covered woods in broad daylight. And then we have a jump scare involving Cuba Gooding Jr. Like, ah, non-threatening black man. Ah, yeah. Ah, ah, ah. Took me a couple scenes to recover from that. But, you know, I thought it was just funny that he just burst out like, why? Hey, are you okay, Lee? So fun. I thought it was just so funny.
Yeah.
It's like next episode, Wayne Brady's going to get me, you know, like, ah, hey, I'm on Whose Line. Then we see the family converge on a clearing where Flora's yellow hoodie is like 100 feet up some kind of Carolina swamp tree.
Yeah.
Scary. Child's being abducted by ghosts are always, you know, always move your scare needle.
Or is it just a windy day? I just...
That's the knives got blown up into the ceiling.
Don't you find
that... freak upwind that just gets whipped through the kitchen and...
I find that to be more reasonable than assuming that a small child climbed to the top of this very tall tree, left her sweatshirt.
Well, obviously the ghost did it. Come on. That's the implication here.
Oh, I know what the implication is. I'm just telling you it's stupid.
The ghost had her out on a boat, like 20 miles from shore, and there is an implication.
Oh, God.
Implication that her hoodie would end up 100 feet up a tree. And there's nothing she could do to stop it.
Uh-huh.
That's the episode.
It's
again,
not an actual threat.
No. It's just implication. That's this episode. Like, you know... I'm to the point of this show where I'm kind of in the Walking Dead mode where sometimes it can surprise me with like how clever or awesome or funny or scary it is. But every once in a while you get an episode like this, which is just like none of the plot lines that I think are important are being advanced. And the things they're doing with the characters seems like long term disastrous in my attempts to connect with them. Mm-hmm. And happening in episode two is a real doozy. Because usually they trick me into caring about the characters a lot longer than this.
Right.
So, there you go. We have feedback. Should we consider some feedback now? Or do you have any closing thoughts?
I'll consider it.
You'll consider some feedback? All right. Nathan E. up front. I like this episode strayed away from the common horror troupe, trope. Yeah, the Second City horror troupe. Famous. Their improvisational horror, just top notch. Just scares the shit out of
people. Nobody jumps out of bushes like
nobody. They do. Nobody throws a bucket of blood on an audience like the Second City.
Horror troupe.
When Cuba Gooding Jr. went downstairs and saw the nurses shoot their patient in the head, he immediately said, "What's going on here?" If this were a traditional haunted house scene, he would have just assumed they were poltergeists and tried to hide his presence. But I think the show played it off like he genuinely believed people broke into his house to perform a surgery. Did you think it was weird that they didn't even acknowledge his presence? Well, no, they're just because they're ghosts, man. Like, I guess that's subverting a horror trope, but also, if I came downstairs and confronted that scene, I would just assume I was dreaming. I don't think I would interact with them like they were real people, because there is in no circumstance would nurses be in my home performing unauthorized surgery on an elderly lady.
I mean, this could also be like a monster house situation, and it's a house itself. That is just showing him a memory to scare him.
It's a bad seed. It's a bad house.
Uh-huh. Have you ever seen Monster House?
It's got a cracked foundation. No, I haven't. It's a Harmon project, right?
Harmon and Rob Schraub.
Well, shit. I need to see it. Before each commercial break, there's a picture of a tree with the words "By Roanoke Nightmare" underneath. Do you think there's a chance of the different Roanoke stories being told throughout the season that all merge at the end? Or are we just going to follow this family around their house for 12 episodes?
Are there different stories?
Well, I mean, so he's saying, like, if you take apart, you've got the current story that's the main hook, but then you got this interesting story about the two nurses, and then you got the story about colonial days, and then there might even be an in-between kind of time story where, like, there was Indian strife and scalpings and stuff, and then, like, this witch story. Like, there's a lot of, I guess he's saying, like, are they going to focus on this, or is this a springboard to where they go into a deeper investigation of the Roanoke happenings?
And you mean the seventh layer of story?
Yes, we got to go deeper.
It's like an onion.
I just know if we don't stop before too long, we're gonna hit a Balrog, and then nobody wants that. Murphy, you're diving too deeply and greedily. I don't know. Like, I think that would be interesting. My hope is that they abandoned it. I don't know how they're going to pivot away from this, but I think they have to, because there just really isn't any tension. There really isn't any tension unless you're really scared about Flora or Mason dying. Not much in the way of tension.
A lot of limbs on the line, though.
A lot of limbs. True. Garrett G, in your first podcast, you discussed it as Lily, Robbie, and the other guy.
did we?
Andre Holland, right?
Yeah, Andre Holland.
Were the survivors, and the Paulson and C.G.C. Cuba Gooding Jr., C.G.J., where it's actually easier to say his name than his initials. Yeah. C.G.J., that's a tongue twister.
C.G.J.
Sells seashells by the sea bay. anyway, the Lily, Robbie and such were the survivors, and the Paulson and such were the reenactors. When I watched it, I took as Robbie and the other guy were the actors on the production, discussing what is known from eyewitness accounts, and they were watching what actually happened to Paulson and CGJ. I mean, I guess you can interpret it that way, but you're ignoring the setup and actual filming practices of all these shows that they are trying to ape.
Right.
You know, it's like watching an MTV music video and trying to draw conclusions about pop. It's like this, you gotta grant that, like, okay, this is in the context of a music video. This is in the context of a reality ghost show. They never do it to where they hire the, that would be an interesting concept. I've just never seen it done. And it would feel like a cheat if Murphy did it. Like, these people are actually dead.
Said as much.
Yeah, these people are actually dead, but we've hired reenactors to go over their journals.
And pretend to tell the story?
Pretend to tell the story. And then we have real found footage of the act. No. Sorry, man. I can't go down that path. If you're right, you get all the internet points, though. Sally C. says, I don't know if you've seen this article, and she makes reference to a PopSugar.com article, which has some details about the upcoming plot. Says, do you think this evidence could show that the talking heads are really just ghosts that Billy Dean is interviewing? Although the interview seems set up out of Billy Dean's style, it could explain why the talking heads are separated through the filming. In addition, this is just a theory. It could also explain why these three are the only ones being interviewed. You'd think that Lee's husband, who, by the way, is the only one reacting correctly to Flora's communication with that fucker Priscilla, granted, would also have a cameo in the interviews. Not to mention, this could lead to one hell of a Halloween episode. Even though I wish they would do what you guys posited last week with the two or three episodes in one case in this Roanoke TV series, they could reveal the ghost status and they even have both actors and ghosts exploring the grounds and have the shit totally hit the fan. Not to mention, Evan Peters could be the actor playing the pig man, and he eventually gets killed by the real pig man, Finn Wittrock? I don't know, I'm just thinking... I tell you what, it would be an excellent use of Evan Peters' main acting skill of screaming senselessly. Just put on the pig head and be you, man.
Yeah,
be you. So her thought is, like, again, this is all plausible except for it would be, in my opinion, Murphy cynically exploiting what we know about these reality shows to subvert them. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if that's fair or not.
Right.
Like, if that's an interesting twist, that, like, at the end, these are actually, even though this is not what Billy Dean does, and this is not the style of that kind of show, you know, there have been psychic shows and the crossing over and all that horse shit, and, like, they just do things differently, because as Cecily said, ghosts aren't real, and even if they are, you can't catch them on camera. Everybody knows that.
Right.
If we're living in a day of filmable ghosts, then, like, ghosts become people. If ghosts can materialize a body and start talking to us and do... you know, publicity tours, mm-hmm. they're fucking people.
Uh-huh.
And that would be a crazy rad world to live in, but it's not the world that even ghost people live in. Right. So I just don't know. But I do want to see Evan Peters as the pig man. Nathan P. scolds me. Says, really, Aaron? We told you to watch seasons 1 and 2 like 2 years ago, and you still haven't. Why are you depriving yourself of the actual good seasons?
Hey, you son of a bitch.
I got shit to do, man. Like, I've watched...
Yeah.
I've watched, like...
Yeah, you have video games to play and fans to disappoint.
I laugh bitter laughs whenever when someone criticizes the amount of TV I watch. Like, come on. Like, I'm not even... Like, get after Jim. Jim's the guy that never watches TV. I at least watch other television.
Hey, don't deflect.
I do. That's my judo move, especially since he never listens to any of these podcasts and has no idea. Like, I could just like run this covert subversive campaign against his popularity and love, and he'd never know. Never know. Don't anyone tell him in the forums. I'm not above a bloody coup or a purge of the Aaron non-Aaron loyalists. I'd probably fuck it up and purge the Aaron loyalists and just really screw myself.
Yeah.
Anyway, he says after he gets done scolding me, I did a shitty job of saying what I meant to say last week, so I'll try it again. The reason this season is reminding me of Asylum is because of the tone. It doesn't feel as pulpy as seasons 3 through 5 yet, and the show feels like it's taking itself more seriously than odd joke here, musical number there, Evan Peters shout, shout, shout everywhere. I suppose I really should have said Murder House given the ghost of the episodes, so sorry. But I thought this week was also pretty good. I think people need to cool it and not sound so entitled about wanting the show to change its current format so early. Aw. Give it time for the show. I want my outrage. Give it time for the show within a show.
I'm with you, man.
Huh?
I'm with Nathan 100%. It's 2 episodes, and if I already said this, but if you're expecting this to be the best thing on television, then you've already come to the wrong place. And it's your fault for watching 5 seasons and not knowing any better.
This season feels more dreadful than the past 3, which seemed to rely on big horrors at the start, such as the Minotaur, Twisty, Addiction Demon, that kept me awake for the first few nights, but ultimately got boring as the episodes progressed. That said, I would not be surprised if one of the twists this season is that the show within the show is playing up everything for viewership. I could totally see a scene later of an exec on the show saying, "We added the murder nurses to double our viewing figures." Anyway, you guys will probably figure out what actually happens in the first 5 minutes of the podcast because you guys are bald move and therefore crazy good at this stuff.
Aww.
Oh, I don't know about that.
So wrong, but thank you. Well, thank you.
He says, "Oh, and Scream Queens is actually good. I know you guys aren't on the biggest Emma Roberts fans. I love Emma Roberts.
Yeah.
I think her tragic pairing with Evan Peters is the big problem.
Yeah, and you know what? Now that I'm thinking about it, the reason why maybe the first couple of American Horror Story seasons were stronger, I enjoy the latter seasons more for the fact that they went away from making it about a teenage romance, which is super annoying.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very particular subset of people that enjoy that.
Yeah,
35-year-old women maybe.
teenage girls.
The Twilight fan base, but it's just, I don't like it. I like Thaisa Farmiga, but I just don't need to see her falling in love with Evan Peters again.
Especially a brain-damaged, raised from the dead Evan Peters, it's funny because, man, if I'd known more about Evan Peters going in that season, I'd have laughed so hard that they were making him play a mentally challenged Frankenstein character.
Yeah.
And it's so funny in retrospect.
And the Emma Roberts, all the characters she plays are fine.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in real life, she beats up Evan Peters. So that's fine. That's fine. It's not okay, actually. Domestic abuse in any way, shape, or form is not
and
okay.
He's doing some crazy speculation about maybe doing a commission podcast for some episodes of Scream Queens. Boy, wow.
Well, you'll probably get him to watch the first couple seasons of American Horror Story before that.
Hillary writes in, the Generation Y podcast covered the mystery of the lost colony of Roanoke back in March of 2014, episode 57, if you'd like to listen. I remember listening to the episode and finding it super intriguing, so I'm very excited that this season of American Horror Story could have that tie-in. Yeah, thanks for mentioning that. I didn't get a chance to listen to it, but I'm going to add it to my podcast queue because I'm a big fan of history, and also like it's research for the podcast. It's a win-win.
Yeah.
So thank you for that, Hillary. KCC, when does the season take place? In Chapter 1, we see Matt leaving the hotel room while the OJ police chase is on the TV, which is in 1994. Okay, I got to stop you there.
It's not the OJ police chase.
That is not the OJ police chase.
It was a fun homage to Cuba Gooding Jr., I think.
Please explain why people think, other than the fact that it'd be super funny that it was, why it's the OJ police chase. Because the OJ police chase was involving a white Bronco.
Yeah.
There is no white Bronco on the screen at all. There's no cop cars on the screen.
Yeah, I think this is just standard copter traffic cam that they show on the news every evening and morning.
And the found footage is from 1997, so we know it has to be after that. I'm assuming it's just current day, because it almost always is when they don't directly mention it.
Right.
So, but yeah, I think that that's the thing. If you think that it's the O.J. Simpson trial he's watching, then you're going to get your timelines all fucked up. So, they also want to know, Casey does, how you rank the seasons to date.
Womp womp.
Because she's saying that this episode, this storyline so far, two episodes in, is the weakest that she's seen Murphy come up with. So best being one, six being worst. She has him ranked Hotel because number one for its great soundtrack, two Murder House, three Coven, four Asylum, and five Freak Show. And then presumably six Roanoke Nightmare. I think that for my money, Coven is the number one that I've seen, because I thought that was the one that was
because it's actually the number one that you've seen.
Then Hotel, then Freak Show. I don't have enough to judge what I'm going to feel about the Roanoke Nightmare season, and I haven't seen Murder House or Asylum. I think we do this at least once a season, but what's your rundown?
I would say Asylum, Coven. I wasn't going to say Freak Show. Asylum, Coven, Hotel, Murder House, Freak Show. Because I just do not like Murder House or Freak Show.
It's too bad, because there is an element of Freak Show, namely the casting of the real freaks and getting to know those characters and their, like, their real-life counterparts, that I thought was amazing.
Right. I think it had the best cohesive story.
Right.
And the best villain we've seen so far.
Yep.
If not short-lived.
Yep. But I do feel like that they kind of lost the plot. And the critical problem there is I just didn't know. I wanted to root for the freaks. They wanted you to root for the freaks. Mm-hmm. But they did a lot of bad shit.
Yeah.
And they, you know, did a lot of bad shit to each other. And right. Some of the people were unlikable, especially, you know, like Lobster Boy. Like Evan Peters is a fucking mess that season.
Yeah, it was like Ryan Murphy was trying to put them in this moral gray area, but he just made it even more black and white.
Right.
Like, this is bad, this is bad.
Yeah.
And they try to do good, and it's trite.
Yeah, we're freaks. We look different, and people hate us for it.
So we get to kill people.
We kill police officers, and people hate us for it. We kill innocent people and housewives and children trick or treating, and people hate us for it. It's just not fair. Like, okay, calm down there. Lisa S. Did Lee almost hit Shelby with a Mercedes Benz? Where is the blatant product placement that's surely expected by AHS? Did he almost, like?
Yeah.
Okay, so is that what? That is product placement, isn't it?
Yeah, that's a joke she's making, I think.
Oh, okay. Run down
like,
your
loved ones. Like, what Mercedes Benz? Where? Yeah. Oh, there it was.
Okay, run down your loved one with the best.
Oh, by the way, for people who have their entire life savings in this house and they have no more money, they could sell the Mercedes Benz.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure the resale value of that's going to be 25 grand, right? Late model BMW or Mercedes at least.
Oh no, wait, that's Lee's car.
Oh.
On a police officer's salary?
On a drug-addled unemployed police officer's salary?
Incredible.
Unbelievable. Now, she was a super educated on the fast track to being detective police officer. I hadn't made it there. Still rocking her blues. Seriously, we have a weird, freaky shit going on, and this is the time to finally bond with your daughter. What is a horror story that danger to a cute little kid? All I can see is that Letty Mae is still a shitty mom. The kid is eating an apple and drinking apple juice at the same time. I think she is trying to kill her kid with vitamin A and C. I was screaming at the TV to get away from the mirror. Haven't you seen Candyman? Comments on your mom's comments about the appropriate times to bond with your daughter?
Well, she used to give me oranges and orange juice together.
Oh, she was trying to kill you with vitamin C.
She was.
Is Ryan Murphy trying to combine? That's what Ryan Murphy does. He combines words like combine and kablow and kablown. He's trying to combine Blair Witch, Andy DeVille horror with a dash of The Shining.
Well, I think, he's going for all the classic horror jump scares this season. I mentioned I don't know that it's classic, but The Sixth Sense was a very ghosty jump scare type of movie.
Sure.
Blair Witch was, even down to Russell Edgington walking around with, you know, homemade footage straight up his face,
mm-hmm.
into his nose holes.
Mm-hmm.
And Amityville Horror?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, there's so many of those. I don't remember.
I can't wait.
Haunted House, like that, and Poltergeist. It's more about the house and what it's doing.
I know that they said they're not going to currently, but I can't wait for the Conjuring folks to finally get to the Amityville Horror.
Oh, right.
Because that's like they constantly mention that leading up to it. And then it's like, now let's tell you a story that's not as scary and interesting.
Right.
And it's still super scary and interesting.
It's one of the best scary movies, contemporary scary movies, I think.
Yeah.
If you're a fan of horror, definitely check those out. The two Conjurings
are super strong. So she says, I know Stephen King, sir, and you are no Stephen King. I guess it does feel kind of Stephen King-y, doesn't it?
What?
And just this style of like... real common folk being afflicted by something monstrous and supernatural.
Well, I mean, if we're going in that vein, then anything is Stephen King. What book has he written that hasn't covered every subject matter? Okay,
I guess that's fair as well. East Coast. It's happened on the East Coast. That's why it's Stephen King.
Yes, exactly.
As opposed to the West Coast horror writer. And there's like, you know... They really need to quash that beef, because if another author gets shot in Vegas, I don't know.
Where does Harlan Coben live?
I don't even know who Harlan Coben is.
He's much like Stephen King, I think.
I think he lives in...
No, I'm thinking of Dean Koontz.
Maybe. Oh, he's lives in Beverly Hills.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah,
they're beefing. They're beefing hard.
Yeah.
She says also, I'm with Cecily. There is something distracting about Sarah Paulson's mouth. It's right? Like she has an overbite and a lisp. Simultaneously.
It's like her lips should be more inflated, but they're just deflated and just hang over her teeth. It's I'm sorry. I don't usually pick on people's personal appearances, and I'm not really picking on it. It's just...
It's odd.
It bothers me.
I don't know. Yeah, I mean... It
sticks out to me, yeah.
She's got... Yes, like, I understand what you guys are saying, but it's like, you know, like, I don't know, there's history's replete of people who have unusual features that people find attractive, like Julia Roberts.
Well, I mean, there's something about it that interferes with her acting to me.
Sarah like Jessica Parker.
Like, when she was brushing her teeth and she laughed in the last episode,
uh-huh.
It seemed so fake.
It seemed like...
Which, it was fake, she was an actor acting like another person, but it's just...
Did it look like the Hindenburg crashing bizarre. On her upper lip and then, you know, deflating in a horror show of flames and violence?
Yes. Okay. Or like when she said, I like my teddy bear this episode. Just, it sticks with me.
Huh. I want someone to Photoshop like Zoidberg's squid lip onto her and just you got to match the flesh tone. Don't be lazy. Hef writes in, just think, at this point in the previous seasons, we had the following bits of excitement going on. Murder House, a home invasion with murderous intent, ending with the daughters, interjected my fantasy in there, ending with the invaders slaughtered by the ghosts, Asylum, the exorcism which causes Sister Mary's possession, Coven, the reveal of Lily Rabb's character, and the resurrection of Evans Peters? Multiple. Freak show, well... Yeah, they robbed us. Russell Edgington never did have the forked penis like we were hoping for.
Yeah.
Freak show, lots of twisty, Meep's death, and even the first occurrence of I hate you, I hate you, I hate you from the dandy. Hotel, introduction to JPM, introduction and turning of Tristan. Last night we got what might be Kathy Bates' creation of the Pigman demon, a parallel to her attaching of the bull's head to the slave who eventually became the Minotaur from the Coven season, and then disappearance and kidnapping of Flora. They're still ruining the story with the show within a show format. I just can't take the season seriously considering I keep getting pulled out of immersion by the constant voiceovers. And I don't feel a whole lot of suspense knowing that I know the three people I'm supposed to care about are all alive and well enough to do interviews of all the events I'm supposed to feel tension for. But do you know they have all their limbs?
You don't.
You don't.
You don't.
You don't know how many nipples they have?
I mean, anyone can take a shot or a stab wound because it's television and people survive those things.
You don't know whether they're shitting in a bag?
You don't.
There's like, do you not feel any concern for a man's bowels? I mean, what kind of monster are you? I think this season is just taking a super campy route, Hef continues, and I feel it's more goofy than horrific, which I don't like. The characters are also making consistently terrible decisions or having stupid reactions to things. For example, after Lee breaks the popcorn bowl while drunk, Shelby inexplicably gets pissed at her for throwing knives into the ceiling, even though they've all been experiencing these supernatural events. Yeah, we talked about that. I totally agree, and I don't. That's an unforced error. There's that scene does not require. That's not the engine that makes that scene work.
No.
So what the hell? I can't believe they actually got on set and like. I don't know. No one brought that up, you know, but whatever. He's of the opinion they need to do 180 real soon, or he's going to dub this season American Horror Novella and bow out early. Underwood says, I think this is the best 2-episode start since Murder House. Maybe it's just that I like this kind of horror more than previous seasons, but I've been slightly scared at least once each episode, and I enjoy that.
Yes. Lee was walking through the house in a drunken stupor and seeing all those things. Mm-hmm. I actually had to turn the volume way down on the TV because I knew a jump scare was going to get me.
Really?
And it did, still.
That
doesn't happen. I've never been scared on any of these seasons.
See, I've been scared in a lot of these seasons. Of course, you know, I'm a bit easier to scare than you. But, yeah, definitely. Despite everything else, are building some effective attention. Not that I think Sarah Paulson's going to die, but I'm going to get scared. I'm afraid that I'm going to get scared. that's tension enough for what it is.
You're concerned about your own bowels?
I'm concerned about my own bowels, yes, because I'm not a fucking monster. F. Regarding the show and within a show format, I don't think it's going to be last the whole season like everyone else. If anyone saw the next time on, maybe it's starting in next episode. I did see that. I'm not sure what evidence you're citing for an ending, but, you know, we'll see. We'll find out together. Amy J says, I know we're only 2 episodes in at this point, but I'm already starting to feel a detrimental lack of focus and progression. Sure, we had a few glimpses of Kathy Bates and some ending intrigue with Flora gone missing, but other than that, the majority of the episodes went over familiar ground of something freaky happening to either Sarah Paulson or Cuba Gooding Jr. giving the whole we were damned if we were going to be driven out speech. In classic Murphy style, we've been smacked in the face with the new subplot, the killer nurse sisters, before the first Kathy Bates and company has ever been really fully explained. The lack of fluency in knitting these narrative threads together has made the show so far feel like a series of campy tableaus rather than a full and satisfying story, which is one of my biggest complaints with Hotel.
I think everyone just needs to hold on to their butts.
That's the thing. Like, I think you can layer on mystery on top of mystery so long as you get around to servicing those in a satisfying and well-paced manner. But I also kind of understand where Amy's coming from because in recent history, it's been very uneven on that.
Yeah.
You know, the pacing and how intriguing things are. And I don't know. I mean, I feel like the other thing that worked about Freak Show was Twisty. Like, not only was he just creepy, but then they did the heel face turn that was just kind of emotionally resonant and devastating. Like, I feel like that was one thing where, you know, an example of kind of like American Horror Story operating at peak efficiently. And that was on an off season. So I don't know. It's I feel like it's interesting because it seems like part of the fan experience of watching American Horror Story is debating in real time whether this is good American Horror Story. It's kind of like, you know, part of the joys of being a cat owner is getting with other cat owners and just bitching about which of your cats is the fucking worst, which is the most murderous, which is the most hateful, the laziest, greedy. I mean, dog owners aren't like that. Dog owners are just like, oh, we have such good boys. Cats are just like, oh, yeah, total these bitches.
Yeah.
Just bitches and assholes living in our house, shitting in boxes. It's crazy.
We love them so much also.
But that's like American Horror Story, right?
Right.
American Horror Story is the wild animal that is in your house, shits in boxes,
could
tears up your furniture.
Any time.
Yeah. Yeah. It could slit your throat, but you keep coming back on Wednesday. And even listening to podcasts, you sick fucks. What's like, come on.
In-depth analysis.
None of us can talk about bad. And not me least of all, because I'm making the podcast. That's orders of magnitude more effort and care and attention. Like, what the hell is wrong with us all? Okay, I was going to read Michelle, but I just was handed breaking news from my editorial team here. Josh F. with a subject, Ryan Murphy hints at season twist structure. This is this a little bit spoilery? You've read it. I haven't
read the article. I just read the email. And I don't think it is. It's just Ryan Murphy saying, hold on to your butts, like I just said.
Okay. So Ryan Murphy, because that's okay. So we'll have a meta conversation here, I'm sure. So Josh F. says, I thought this was an interesting yet informative or an interesting yet somewhat vague piece of information that Ryan Murphy dropped, which gives me hope that the season is not going to be the same storytelling structure all season long. At the very least, it confirms that everything isn't what it seems on the surface. Here's a quote from Up Rocks, entitled American Horror Story Season 6 Twist. Ryan Murphy says, even though the subject matter has gotten out, it's irrelevant because nobody gets what we're doing, says co-creator Brad Falchuk. Okay, that wasn't Ryan Murphy. No matter what you think it is, it's not that. Then episode 6 comes and you're like, wait, what happened? Adds Murphy, it's a hat on a hat on a hat on a hat that we've had to protect. While Murphy thinks the twist separates the season into two halves, Falchuk considers it three unique stories. He says it's like episodes 1 through 5, 6 through 9, and 10 is its own thing. Murphy, Falchuk, if you are success, you cannot pat yourself on the back for successfully concealing the hat within a hat within a hat structure in the same interview that you reveal.
And two episodes in, you're like, we can't hold it anymore.
Like, you guys are the fuck.
It's like giving a six-year-old a secret.
They really are. It's like asking my son to keep a birthday present surprise or any kind of surprise for more than 3 seconds.
Yeah.
Like, he does this every season.
I mean, but that's the thing. It's the formula for every season. Midway through, they're going to flip the script on you. It's just what they do.
Yeah.
It's formulaic. It's not groundbreaking.
Yeah. I don't know. It's interesting because, like, last season with, you know, and plus he lies. Like, last season with Lady Gaga, like, when people were talking about her being a vampire, he's like, hey, you know, the secret is she's not really a vampire. Like, I'm really turning the whole vampire structure on its head. And then you realize, no, you're not.
She just doesn't bite people.
Yeah. Yeah, like that's been done. I guarantee fucking that version of vampire has been done. Like, mm-hmm. You know, your glampire thing is all busted and weak. But it's like, you know, he can't get it out of his own way on these mm-hmm. things. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, Mercedes-Benz.
Bring the hammer.
Michelle, back with the hammer. I'm really into Kathy Bates' character this season. I'm so intrigued by the creepy mystery behind why she is what she is.
Her vaguely Irish colonial accent.
Yeah, it's
what is she doing?
She's doing a 16th century Baltimore accent, and it's super authentic.
I guess
I've got a wax cylinder recording of a 16th century Old Bay commercial that I'll play next episode.
Wonderful.
And we'll all find out that nope, Kathy Bates is nailing this.
Can't wait.
I thought her mini speech last night was really interesting, so I did research into it and found that it's pulled from a poem called Amerigrin's Challenge, which is derived from the original song of Amerigrin.
Oh.
Amerigrin Galugulan was a legendary bard and spoke these words as he set foot on Irish soil for the first time. I'm telling you, this name is Gaelic as fuck. I had no defense against it.
Gaelic?
Yeah. So he's a legendary bard and spoke these words as he set foot on Irish soil for the first time. Apparently, in the early 1900s, scholars suggested the poem had both spiritual and cosmological meaning, connecting both the soul and the cosmos world. But it also had been suggested that it was a meta-psychosis-sorcery connection, especially in that sorcerers had been believed to have been able to shapeshift. After seeing a part of it recited by Kathy Bates' character last night, it seems as though Murphy is using it to take a show into dark places involving demonic rituals. Interesting to say the least. So here's the Amerigrin's challenge, and I think she italics the part that Kathy Bates actually said. I am a wind across the sea. I am a flood across the plain. I am the roar of the tides. I am a stag of seven tines. I am a dewdrop let fall by the sun. Honestly, nothing more horrific than a dewdrop. I'm the fierceness of boars.
From the sun, that's like hot magma, right?
And it fell from 93 million miles away. The velocity on that dewdrop, that's like 16 million degrees. Like, it's just like, it might as well be a fusion rifle.
It's like a sniper bullet, yeah.
I'm the fierceness of boars. Eh? 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 I am a hawk. My nest is on a cliff. I am the height of poetry. I'm the most beautiful among flowers. I'm the salmon of wisdom.
Salmon of wisdom.
I am the tuna of the sea. Or I am the chicken of the sea. Who but I is both the tree and the lightning strikes it's who is the dark secret of the dolmen not yet hewn? I am the queen of every hive. This is where Kathy starts coming in. I defied on every hill. It just sounds like I'm doing an Arnold Schwarzenegger. No. I'll continue. I am the shield over every head. Okay, I am the spear of battle. I am the ninth wave of eternal ruin. I am the grave of every vain hope. Who knows the path of the sun, the periods of the moon? Who gathers the divisions, really enthralls the sea, set in order the mountains, the rivers, the peoples? There.
Incredible.
So I took issue with you saying that she had an Irish accent, but this seems conclusive that they're trying to really Irish the
fuck. Well, there is one word in particular that she spoke, and it was only one word that she spoke in an Irish accent, which is what was so bizarre to me.
And it was Blarney. Like, you would... They threw that in the script just so they'd really hit the Irishness.
Right. It's like she was doing an Irish accent of someone trying to do a colonial accent, and they accidentally let slip on one word.
Right.
Right. Yeah.
No.
Bizarre.
Yeah. Yep. She comes out. Erin O'Blarney.
I admit Kathy Bates is doing a great job, and she's probably doing a great accent, but it's just so obscure.
Uh-huh.
That people just can't relate to that. And
do you think that, I think that Ryan does this as a meta, like people gave him shit for, like, cause she had the, like, a crazy Southern accent in the Covenant season. That was her first,
that's
right?
That's fine. Yeah. Louisiana Southern.
But then he's
nobody wanted her to do Old Bay.
Yeah. Then she does the Balmer accent, and now she's doing this. Like, I feel like that this is something that Murphy does in the medicines because he's interested in it. Like, this is your thing now, Kathy.
No, that's, I guess that's true.
You talk in kooky accents. Yeah. Cause she doesn't have any control over this. It's not like she's making the creative. She's not Marlon Brando-ing.
In Freak Show, at least.
What?
That doing the accent was her decision.
But what I'm saying is they gave her this Baltimore root, so it makes sense for her to, like...
Oh, yeah, she just ran with the old-timey accent.
Yeah, you're right. Nothing saying that as a 16th-century Irish colonial in a reenactment that she has to do this crazy Irish, which is not going to be authentic anyway.
I mean, that's the thing. It's like either you have everyone do it or no one at all, and I can almost guarantee you not everyone's going to be doing it.
Yeah. But anyway, American...
Lady Gaga was in this episode.
Nuh-uh.
Yeah, she was dressed as the Enchantress from Suicide Squad. She was in this episode.
Seriously?
Yeah, she was the one that was, like, standing right over her shoulder. She had, like, long brown hair and, like, the...
No, I did not. I'm going to have to go back and watch that.
Oh,
no,
yeah.
I did not realize that. Holy shit.
Oh, yeah, it doesn't even look like her.
Why, well, there's why I didn't realize it. So, interesting. I could totally get behind the Lady Gaga Enchantress.
She was, like, chanting right at her shoulder the whole time.
Okay. Well, I was fixated on Kathy Bates and couldn't take my eyes off her accent.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like, you know how it's when, like, you're looking when you get into a neighborhood and you're like in the last little leg of the directions, you have to turn down the radio.
Yeah,
like,
so you can see better.
I had to turn my eyeballs down so I could hear her accent better.
Like, all of my senses were focused. I had to just feel my way. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's exactly how it works.
Anyway, I hope you guys have enjoyed this podcast. And
we enjoyed making it.
We did. We had a lot of fun. And we'll see what Murphy has cooked up in store for us next week on the next episode, which I predict will be called Chapter 3. If you'd like to send us feedback, ahs@baldmove.com or get on forums.baldmove.com, where you can discuss each week's episode with your merry band of fellow watchers and listeners and fans.
And masochists.
And we will see you next week. Until then, I'm Aaron.
And I'm Cecily.
Have a great weekend.
Probably still be Cecily next week, too.